You're listening to
spoiler
filled
film
conversation.
Hooray!
Love of God. yeah, so guys, we're here once again. I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me today is
Anthony Evans. Good day.
And
Oliver the Toaster Man.
And Bane. Hi, Toaster Man.
And this film is not about Oliver, so thanks for confusing matters off the bat. the film I picked is the sprawling epic that is The Brave Little Toaster. It's an animation, and I picked it because it was a childhood film I watched many times, and I just think it's an underrated classic. But I wanted you guys to have another look at it, or a look at it for the first time, so that's why I picked it, guys. Can someone give the details for our listeners before we start talking about it? Are they left in, they're left in the other room? I'm going to stall because we can't edit this podcast because I'm lazy. So in the filler, I will say nothing of consequence so that Anthony can join us momentarily.
Maria, you've got to see her.
So, The Brave Little Toaster, made in 1987. Directed by one Jerry Reese, who is known for directing a lot of shorts by Disney. Written by the same guy, Jerry Reese, and Joan Ranft. Ranft, R-A-N-F-T. Also a writer for many Disney films. Let's see, we have stars. As the toaster, we have Deanna Oliver. As Blanky the Blanket, we have Timothy E. Day. As Lampy the Lamp, we have Tim Stark. The biggest name, probably, is John Lovitz as the radio. Also, we have Phil Hartman playing a bit of, more of a cameo as the air conditioner.
We didn't look up Kirby.
I'm sorry.
We'll add it on later, people.
Anyway, Kirby is a vacuum cleaner.
It's the only one with a more original name than Lampy and Toaster and Radio, who are lamps, toasters and radios and things, so it feels so bad to let him out of the acting credits.
I was reading some trivia, and apparently he's named after a type of vacuum cleaner from the 60s.
Well, that's nice.
Okay, so they couldn't go with Hoover.
I would guess that Kirby was out of business by then and wouldn't want money.
If it was today, it would have been called like Dyson or something. But that's not as cool a name. Henry the Hoover. But then that would be, he's like celebrity. They'd be like the top billing and be too much of a star to appear in such a modest animation, really. So, yeah, let's talk about our expectations. Obviously, mine were, I can't wait to watch this again. Nostalgia. Woo!
I'd watched part of it before. I was impressed the first time.
Tut.
I may have been in the wrong mood previously. But my expectations were down because I hadn't enjoyed it before.
Oliver?
My expectations were, let's say, lower than average. And I think that's wrong because it's a very good movie. I may have been in the wrong mood because as I watched it, this sense of overwhelming dread began to seep across me.
Maybe it's just something about watching it the first time. You have to watch it the second time and it's fine.
It's definitely the wrong mood. It's not a movie which should inspire overwhelming dread and fear.
It's got a few scary moments, I suppose, if you're
the whole thing is quite
coward
sad.
Kind of. I mean, we'll get to it, I guess. Anthony, what about you?
Oh, I'm in the same boat as you, Rich. I used to watch it all the time when I was a kid. I've watched it recently. I watched it again quite happily. It's a good film. I like it.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. I needed someone on my support team because the last few picks I've had have gone down not brilliantly. So this predates Toy Story and yet shares many similarities to it.
Yeah, I'm glad everyone else saw that as well, because I was watching it and I was like, this is not beat for beat Toy Story, but there are quite a few like similarities.
Yeah, the appliances in search of their owner who
sort of moving house.
The time space is different. The owner has moved house and now they're finding him sometime later.
Yeah.
And it's about their misadventures trying to find him.
It's also in a way about objects that are brought to life and then have to try and unite and make friends, even though they kind of don't get on partially. So there's a lot of things throughout the movie. But apparently it makes sense, because didn't one of the writers also write the original story for Toy Story or something?
Yes.
The Ranft.
This whole film was originally a Disney film itself, going to be directed by like John Lasseter, who was most famous for like founding Pixar.
Toy Story.
It was like the early days of CG, and they had to like Disney dropped it because this wasn't going to be as cheap as they thought it would.
Nevertheless,
so maybe this is the actual precursor to Toy Story.
In many ways, he certainly picked up his old scripts and had another look at them before writing this one. But that's good. I think they're different enough as well, so it's not like if you've seen Toy Story or the, vice versa. I mean, you know, it's not the same exact thing. Where to begin? I mean, we could go through the film. We could just talk about various elements. Does anyone want to?
I think let's talk talk about things that particularly stuck out for us.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is essentially you got these household appliances which don't get on well together, and
they kind of do.
Well, at the beginning, they're really quite grumpy and angry.
Friends, but bickering friends, aren't they?
And then, their master. Actually, I didn't like the way they kept calling him the master. That was
master.
Yeah, that was a bit odd. But they decide to go on a quest to find their long-lost master, who moved away a long time ago. And after some experiences out in the wild, they eventually get there. And then they get thrown out by the new appliances, go to a junkyard, and then come back again.
That's the synopsis. They're right there. Yeah, so essentially, let's talk about the characters then, because they're the kind of focus of this. We've got this fairly simplistic character trait. So there's like the toaster, who's it's named after, is the nice, lovable sort of medium. Yeah, I don't know.
It's not really nice to begin with, though.
It's kind of the leader of the pack, anyway.
You kind of have to judge them all by the way they treat Blanky, I think. And in that sense, none of them are particularly nice to begin with.
Yeah, like Toaster, who should be the nicest, is quite cold at times when he wants to just sleep alone and things. But yeah, like so the Toaster's like the Mickey Mouse of the group, or the Mario, where he's the leader, but you don't like him the best.
Isn't Kirby the leader, though?
Oh, he's just their strong man, you know. So Kirby's their grumpy, I'll go along with it because I haven't got much of a choice, but I'll object all the way through and never really show my love for you. Until I have to. And then we've got the kind of, I don't know, what would you describe the lamp as? He's sort of kind of loud, obnoxious, but also
he's quite dog-like.
Dopey.
For me.
He's kind of is he kind of the Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz?
Not in the same way that he's not passionately loved more than all the others. So what's your comparison? I'm not quite with you on the Scarecrow bit.
Well, I'm a bit confused in Wizard of Oz anyway, but. Isn't the Scarecrow kind of the one who has ideas, but then...
Yeah, dumb ideas over and over again.
But they're never thought through properly.
Yeah. But I wouldn't quite connect Lampy to the Scarecrow. I don't think it's quite the same way they behave. I mean, he's not this noble idiot. He's just an idiot, in my opinion, the Lamp. But he saves the day at times as well. So, you know, he's not a meritless fool. And then we got the kind of exaggerating how would you describe the radio? He's sort of
melodramatic,
yeah, and kind of funny comedy character. He's got that thing where he often tries to play what's on the radio as his own voice, like a la like Johnny Five or something. And he's probably my favourite character. And we got Blanky, who is an electric blanket that is a bit of a wet blanket.
Which is
kind of dangerous if he's electric one. But, yeah, he's a big wuss-puss. But, you know, he serves his purpose.
He has an infant mind as well. He's kind of the kid.
Yeah, that's true.
He's your baby. Aww.
And they're your motley crew of appliances that are apparently alive.
And you've already done Kirby.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Grumpy. Vacuum.
It's this... Everyone's going to like the radio the best.
You reckon?
Yeah. He's just awesome.
Ollie, it's that voice he has. It's the like the old timey kind of nostalgic radio voice. I don't know. There's something very appealing about that.
It's also the way that he can use his antenna as sort of a single arm. Yeah. And does lots of gesturing and pointing. Yeah.
He's also the most game for like dancing and messing about when you should be helping out.
Yeah, that's where the energy comes from him, I guess, you'd say. Yeah.
Ollie, would you disagree? Have you got a favourite that isn't the radio? You haven't disagreed?
No, the radio is fine. The radio is fine. The most entertaining character.
But the brave little radio doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
Even when they were facing, let's say, death.
They faced death many times.
Yeah. In the bog. And he's playing a song as he's sinking into the...
Is the radio the only one who doesn't sacrifice himself in some way during this movie?
He's in peril on his own at one time.
He doesn't sacrifice himself, but that isn't to say that he's self-serving either. He's a team player, but he doesn't sacrifice.
He's there to keep up morale.
Because there's lots of death. And then there's also lots of kind of real self-sacrifice, because Lampy basically saves the battery by more or less sacrificing himself to death. But fortunately, he was okay. And
well, everyone has that moment where they do step up. Like, Blanky sort of saves them by creating a tent with a tree branch while they're stuck in the wilderness. And the lamp sort of charges the battery, you know, and by getting lightning to strike him, Toaster throws himself into some gears to save the master, and the Hoover sort of joins them when he's safe and jumps off into a waterfall. So I guess I can't think if the radio does anything proactive.
Nah, man, he's the comic relief. He's not there for that.
He's there to add some melodrama where it isn't, and be sarcastic when it is there.
Completely upstage them all if he had to sacrifice, because he's a fool. As soon as they go all the way to the other end, it's amazing.
One of my favourite bits is when, like, Blanky's blown up into the trees, and the radio is like, "Don't be scared of the incredible height." It's just, he's always there to kind of undermine everything, and be extra funny. I don't know.
Yeah, that's not like you at all.
Whatevs.
This film, it does have, first of all, it's got like a lot of nostalgia. First of all, like, all the appliances are kind of like 60s nostalgia.
Yeah.
So you have like the toaster and the radio, and they all kind of have that. But then the whole thing also has a kind of 80s nostalgia of the way it is.
Yeah. Mm. Like, all the modern appliances are very 80s, which is kind of strange now.
And all the songs and the style of, like, the animation as it goes along. And it's got that thing that, like 80s cartoons have, where it can chuck, like, all the sad stuff at you as it possibly can. But as long as it's got a happy ending, everything's fine.
And thank goodness it did. If this was, like, a Greek tragedy or something, it would be horrible.
This film, all the way through, there's just, like, a feeling of, like, I wouldn't quite say sadness, maybe, like, a melancholy.
It's just because
you feel kind of there. Not pathetic per se, but it's like, it's a horrible thing to see them in this situation where they're pining for something which, essentially, as an audience member, you know, you don't know whether, like, this master character is
as good as they
turn
make out
the way it is.
It's a bit ominous as well, but maybe it's just because it's really weird actually when they go out on their quest. For a long time, it feels as if they have absolutely no idea where they're going.
Yeah.
And then a lot later, one of them happens to know the address.
Yeah.
And then you feel a lot better. If they just mentioned that they knew the address they were going to,
you would be
way earlier in the movie, it wouldn't be quite so ominous.
Yeah. Well, like you say, it is a weird point where you think, oh, they're in the city, but oh no, how are they going to find the master? It's a city, you're never going to find him. And it's just, oh, we'll just tear out this phone book and ask the traffic light, and he'll point us in the right direction. Bam, we're there. Like, so there's no weird travelling the city bit anyway.
It's weird because they leave the cabin out in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
And even then, they just go off in a seemingly random direction, and it doesn't feel as if they're even...
towards the city of life. Which
the radio is... What does he do? He, like...
Oh yeah, he picks up signals.
Tunes into city radio and then goes that way. So they do have, like, a vague direction.
This would be an interesting one to do now, because they'd have modern appliances like iPads and things, so they could just hook up to the internet. Maybe Skype him. How's it going, Master? Yeah. How's college and stuff working out? So, music numbers. I was trying to segue in, but, you know, I would like to... Like, if we just talk about the music generally,
let's talk about the animation.
The music all the way through is good. The musical numbers are okay to not okay.
What do you mean?
Well, the music, like the incidental music. Well, I don't want to say incidental. But like, say, remember the opening credits, and like we have the music going over there, and it's in like quite a nice tone and feeling. And
the score is good.
The score is good, yes. Yeah. But then the musical numbers aren't particularly memorable or catchy.
Oh, shut up.
I'm not saying they're bad. They're just kind of standard. I mean, it's no like, you know, classic Disney where you can remember all the words to like the songs.
I disagree to some extent. There's two that stand out for me. And one is the B movie song where the sort of weird appliances are all it's weird because we're skipping ahead a lot, but yeah. the kind of Frankenstein's monster of appliances where you've got all the sort of worn out objects that are in the back of a shop of like a guy who sells parts for various things, and they're trying to. It's kind of like, it's again, like Toy Story. It's like when he's in Andy's... Is it not Andy's house? What's the bad guy in Toy Story called?
Sid.
When the toys are in Sid's house, all the creepy toys come out. But in this, the creepy objects in the Brave Little Toaster are trying to deliberately kind of scare them and freak them out by singing their song about the kind of B-movie-style gore that's going to happen to them if they stay here. And I like that number because I think it's quite catchy.
It sets a good tone, but like I say, it's not particularly memorable afterwards.
It's a B-movie.
I think
it's a B-movie show. See, I know it.
It's over the heads of kids as well.
But do they know what B-movies are? Meh, they get it. It's all shadow puppets and like evil stuff going on.
I do like the last song where they're at the junkyard.
Yeah, that's the other one I was going to say, is there's this, again, one of the more sad moments where all the cars are being crushed at the junkyard, and they're singing about the good times they had in their lives before being crushed to death.
Weird how the two songs you've chose like evolve around like the deaths of many of the characters.
Well, you know, it's because the bad songs that you alluded to, I would agree with in the sense that I think there are a few poorer ones, and... The one I think that's the weirdest is they have a moment on their first part of their adventure where they're with a bunch of animals that are messing about in a lake, in a flowery area. Yeah. It's just the weirdest bit of the movie where they have like a naff kind of song and dance and comedy bit. Does anyone want to comment on that at all?
Nothing happens.
It is weird. What was the bit thing you mentioned to me? I was briefly popped out and you said there was a bit I missed.
There's a bit where a flower falls in love with Toaster because it thinks his the reflection in him is another flower, and then when Toaster leaves, it wilts and some of it comes off. It's absolutely broken hearted.
It really is.
Why is it in there?
So, can I ask my question?
Go on.
Is this a kids' movie?
No.
Yes.
It's a challenging kids' movie, definitely. Maybe that's why I liked it so much when I was young.
You shouldn't. I don't think you should like wrap children in cotton wool and only give them innocence and niceness. I think you can give them, you know, a bit of dark with the happy.
It's as much as a kid's film as, say, like any other, like Don Bluth film, like American Tale. Whereas, like, if you actually watch American Tale, all the way through, it's just all this crap is being thrown at this, like, essentially child.
Yeah.
And, like, right up until the end, there's no, like, kind of happy things happening. But then, right at the end, oh, everything's fine. We're good now. So, it's kind of the same with this.
So it kind of fits into the problem I have with lots of kids' films from the 80s.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. A steady wall of heartache.
Well, I mean, there's so many bits. I mean, there's other songs in it, but, you know, they have, like, Tutti Frutti, which is quite good, but not really a song it's not really a song of this movie, it's just a good song that they sing. Mm. And they have another sort of lame one about travelling to the city that's a little bit too innocent and dopey. And, you know, I see your point. There are a few duff songs, but I do like the two I mentioned particularly. And throughout this, there's a lot of peril. There's a lot of heartache and death in a sense, because, you know, objects, how much do you care about objects? But when they're alive, that's different.
The thing. It's like it's created a world where, like, these cars and... I can't remember what it was, like scales. No, it was a mixer.
A blender.
Yeah, blender, yeah.
And the blender kind of gets gruesome horror treatment.
Yeah.
And all these cars are like crushed willy-nilly into cubes.
Create things just to die. It's horrible.
So what their hardships include, I mean, you know, just travelling is a bit tough. nighttime terrors, the quagmire they fall into, they all get nearly fall. They all get kind of sucked into the mud.
Except
their death.
They all fall in the river. They all are going to be like essentially murdered or tortured by a
repair guy.
Then they're like thrown out of into the garbage by the new appliances. Then they're going to be crushed
with a very malicious giant magnet that is particularly annoyed that they're trying to escape their fate.
Overall, it's really, really good, but those appliances do make it through incredibly unscathed.
Yeah, they went down 3 waterfalls. Fine.
And Toaster does just get grind up in a cog and, you know, absolutely destroyed in a way, but then he's, like, fixed and still works perfectly.
Hmm.
So
they are very lucky. They're, like, their master has a kind of hobby where he likes to fix old things. Otherwise, they would have been... this would have been a very sad film otherwise.
Their master's kind of a weird guy because he is kind of a nerdy, lame guy. He's kind of has a nostalgia for when he used to like go to the cabin and play there in the summer and stuff. And he's kind of he'd rather pick up his old things than he would buy new stuff. And you know, he's practically being told by his girlfriend and mother, "You should just get new stuff and I'll borrow mine or whatever." Mm. And he's like, "No, I need my old stuff. That's lame."
It's really odd when the humans start appearing. Actually, none of them quite seem in face of reality.
Hmm.
And his mum seemed perfectly fine with him going off to college with his girlfriend.
Hmm.
Yeah, but she's a modern woman. She has loads of modern appliances full of maliciousness. And
it was the 80s.
Yeah, young boys would be tortured by their girlfriends and changed forever.
No, but unless it was a good university, universities still have terrible reputations.
Well, just to give you guys a spoiler, in the sequels, he turns out a good egg. He goes on to be, I think, a vet or something.
Good.
But, you know, so don't worry about him. He makes it through university the same loser geek he was in this movie. One of the best bits for me, of non-horror bits, was... Okay, so specifically then, the blanket has... a delusion early on. Like, they're very concerned when a car's going by because it could be the return of their master. And the blanket hears the car, sees the car, and then it morphs into his fantasy where all the landscape changes to be weird, surreal, colourful and beautiful landscapes, and the master comes bounding out of the car and he's like floating down the stairs to like be reunited. It's one of the weirdest and funniest moments for me in the movie.
It's also one of those moments where it comes to and it really... It's quite a sad, abrupt ending. The film's full of those moments where it's like, oh, it's a dream. And they're...
And
like,
that's tragic.
On their own, like a small house in the distance. And it's all quite... Oh.
One other thing we forgot. They contend with an evil air conditioner early on. They sort of deal with an air conditioner that's kind of annoyed that they're so optimistic and happy considering they've been abandoned in a house. And he's giving them a dose of reality and he kind of goes into a strange anger coughing fit that more or less collapses.
And then dies.
But it's okay, he gets fixed
by
the master.
He speaks in like a Jack Nicholson impression.
Yeah, he does! I only noticed that this time round. He does just come across as exactly like Jack Nicholson.
But that was like another one of those weird moments where things are getting angry, things are getting hot, and then all of a sudden he explodes and then cut to like a just a wrecked air conditioner.
Yeah.
And it's just full of these little moments and like motifs that are just really sad.
Now, yeah.
I get confused now because in a way this is more consistent than Toy Story, because in Toy Story, inexplicably, it's only the toys that are alive.
Yeah.
At least here, practically everything is alive. But then...
They all have to be some kind of gadget, I think. I think if they are somehow powered by electricity, they're allowed to be... Like, the brooms, the skateboards and things don't come alive. For some reason, the fridge freezer doesn't come alive. They try and transport themselves on that briefly, on a skateboard. And that goes wrong. But that's not alive, so there's still inconsistency.
Yeah, it's still... It's a bit inconsistent. And apparently... They can get by with electricity as long as they're not using their special powers.
Yeah, it is a bit weird in the sense that they need to be plugged in, but not all the time if they're just moving a little bit.
Mm.
Also, another weird thing is they break the rule that Toy Story tries to avoid, which is you can't show humans you're alive. And when they break out of the repair shop, they basically just scare the crap out of the guy by, they kind of put themselves in a way that they light up the toaster and give him the blanket hair, and they just drive towards him and scare him by coming alive. And he rightfully freaks out and passes out. And then they all of the gadgets, even the bad kind of horror ones, all burst out of the shop.
And run down the street.
Yeah. So I don't know, they don't seem to care that much about keeping the unspoken rule of not showing humans we're alive.
Well, he is essentially a war criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a tyrant. He's a despot.
So you're allowed to like give him a heart attack?
Yeah.
He's a war criminal. He's been committing
also,
atrocities.
The guy drives a monster truck. How inconsiderate to the environment is that? Takes his dog out walking in the country for some reason and like has to drive his giant monster truck, which
in the hopes that he'll find appliances in the middle of like the forest.
But he does, Auntie, so he does. He's obviously he knows what he's doing. he doesn't have to buy storage spaces and see what's in there. He just wanders aimlessly and finds them. Yeah, so we got all like just the fact that there's just so many trials and tribulations for them is kind of amazing.
I want to talk about Toaster's nightmare.
Oh yeah. Well, again, this is one of the things. They don't have peril for a bit, so why not have the psychology of the objects come to the stage and give a bit of drama? Go on, please.
And it was a toaster was on the shelf. He was making some toast for the master, but then smoke starts to come out of him. Like
this is in his dream now.
Yeah, and smoke fills the room, and then I'm not sure
the master's dragged away.
Yeah. Oh, the smoke turns into a massive hand, takes away the master, and then there's a clown fireman who comes up. Smiles and
evil
just says,
smile.
Run.
And then there's like forks flying down from the sky, and he's being dangled above a bath that's filled with water. It's terrifying.
It is.
Terrifying
nightmare. Terrifying.
And they just throw that in to make you go, wow, they've really been through some stuff, these objects that have been abandoned.
There's this whole character development of them slowly becoming less, I don't know, less deranged. The closer they get to the end of the movie, or perhaps they've basically been sort of stirring there by themselves, becoming ever more bitter or desperate, and that's why they're all kind of cranky at the beginning of the film, I guess.
Yeah, because you know we get told basically that they've been there for like you know we don't know how long, but we're like a long time, and they basically just do chores to keep themselves amused and mess about because they've been left there for so long.
Well, judging by. I can't say the master. His name's Rob. Judging by Rob's...
Is his actual name Rob? Did they
yes,
call...
yes.
I know, right.
Judging by the photo and then his age that he's going to college, I would guess it's kind of like 10 years.
I would have said about that. Mm. The only mention is like, I think Kirby says 2,000 days.
Yeah.
Same thing we've been doing for the last 2,000 days.
Also, who leaves a fully furnished summer home with all that time without going there? I mean, it's a probably good job they're selling it because they have not been using it if they haven't been turning up, you know, for that long.
It doesn't make any sense, does it?
Why would you have a fully furnished house you don't go to in the summer? I mean, for goodness sake, affluent? yeah, so, I mean, that is the situation. We can't change it, but we can question it. If we move towards the end of the film, so unless there's any bits we've missed out that we need to talk about particularly,
we could talk about how humans are just portrayed, I guess.
Go on. I mean, we got the mum who is always off camera, which is kind of if you're going to have one off camera, maybe you should have them all off camera. But
yeah, first they're in the movie, which is quite unusual. I think it's more the shop guy. Because he's very... It's kind of a cynical... There's a really, really cynical view of the shop guy. He's really cartoony.
Mm. Yeah.
And then Rob is kind of...
Kind of normal-looking.
Oh, in the flashbacks, that's a... He's the weirdest kid in the flashbacks.
He's kind
ridiculously
of...
Ridiculously wholesome.
Yeah.
In general, he probably... But then his older character is kind of wholesome as well, despite being a bit of a... He's older, but he's kind of still a bit of a mook.
It was kind of weird. I think the whole girlfriend thing threw me off a bit because
this guy ain't getting with anyone,
and not her specifically.
No.
Not her.
No, exactly. She's so streetwise. It's just weird.
They stay together. Spoilers. Yeah, I know what you mean though. It is a straight. I don't know. It's always a weird thing when you focus on non-human characters and then you have human characters. It is how do you how caricatured are your characters going to be? It is something, you know, that's tricky to get right. And I don't know. I think it's fine. I don't have any problem with it myself.
But then I guess if you look at the way he is, and then that partly explains how the appliances behave, because they will have learnt how to behave from him.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird psychological question to be asked. Is objects learn from humans, or do they learn from other objects?
Because the first time they're turned on and given the magic spark of electricity, presumably they imprinted on him or something.
Yeah,
they certainly don't learn from each other. You don't like have a mummy toaster and then a George Foreman, and they get together and have a, like an Easy Bake Oven or whatever. Like, I don't know how how appliances become. We can't get into this. It's too weird. They shouldn't be alive. Bizarre.
Of course they should be. Every rule of Disney logic says that
everything can come alive.
Objects can be anthropomorphized, and when we said that this was the precursor to Toy Story, it is. But it's practically everything in Disney where anything comes alive is also a precursor.
Well, a lot of the time it's animals and humans. I mean, in say Beauty and the Beast, yes, there are objects that come alive, but there is a backstory for why they're humans and stuff. So they become like humans again when all the objects are like, when the spell is
broken
and they all come back to being human, which is a shame, because I think everyone in Beauty and the Beast would prefer them to stay as objects where they're kind of fun and kooky rather than just human boring people. I don't know. So any other things we want to bring up before I try and draw us to the finale of the
Ernie's disposal?
Oh, this is one of my favorite bits where they have the song in the, when the toaster and his posse are all thrown in the junkyard because of the new appliances, who sing a rather interesting song about modern the modern replacing the old and stuff. That's kind of a weird 80s
song.
More. Everything you wanted and more. See, they are catchy. See? don't patronise me with your noise. But anyway, they get thrown out and they end up in the junkyard.
But there is a TV that previously was in the summer house and got taken in the move, that is now in the present house.
And he's sort of their old friend, TV.
And he's trying to, at first, subtly tell Rob, was it?
Yes.
Math.
That he needs to go to Ernie's disposal. Because they're talking about getting new stuff. He's like, go to Ernie's disposal, second hand, cheap.
Yeah.
And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and he's trying to convince him more and more until they get the picture. So they end up being, well, you've got it written down.
Well, it's like he says all kinds of things from like, it's a circus of value. Oh no, it's a Ernie's circus where you can ride the Ferris wheel of value to bargains and stuff. And then I think the final title of what he says Ernie's like dump is called is Ernie's Amazing Emporium of Total Bargain Madness.
That's Crazy Ernie.
Crazy Ernie's Amazing Emporium of Total Bargain Madness.
You see, there the TV breaks the rules as well.
Yeah. But he does it subtly. I'll commend him on actually dressing it up as maybe an advert.
Yes, he does it very subtly in what seems like a 5-minute advert.
Also, would the TV's like character change if someone changed the channel?
When they changed the channel, it did start speaking in Spanish.
Yeah.
And he was a different news announcer.
Was that still the TV, though?
I think, because it still operates as a TV, it does have to show the actual feed to a human. But then
it's weird, because like, basically, the TV's face is an anchor from the TV, but does this anchor really exist, or is he a personification of the TV?
If the TV is actually showing some TV, is the anchor guy just standing slightly to the left of the screen watching?
It certainly raises a lot of questions.
We could talk about this all day, guys.
Yeah, and that, it is a really great moment, that bit, anyway. But they do get rescued, and they turn up the tip, do Rob and his partner, or
he
friend.
Has the trippiest thing, though, because he's looking for stuff, and I think he's on the verge of giving up.
Yeah.
Then he finds the picture of himself
as a child
that Blanky has been carrying around. And he starts having this trippy thing. It's a picture of me and all of my stuff. What is going on here?
Oh, that's right. This is something we missed out. Is basically, while we establish that Rob is going to get his old things from the summer home anyway. So it turns out that the toaster and his posse don't actually need to go. If they'd stayed a couple more days, they all would have been picked up and gone on the journey to the university with him anyway.
Mm.
So it's kind of a bitter irony right at the end that when they're in the tip, he's actually looking for them. And then, yeah, like you say, he discovers all his stuff in the tip, and then trying to get them back, he's picked up by the malicious magnet at the tip and dropped on the conveyor belt and sort of caught under some rubble and is about to die, and it is terrifying.
How did the magnet pick him up?
He's holding on to Kirby.
Okay, good.
And then he's too high to let go, I guess.
Yeah, they do actually put in that moment where Clocks, I'm really high now. Oh dear.
Mm. But like we mentioned, Toaster sacrifices himself to save Rob. And the girlfriendy character sort of just shrugs off, like, oh, stop being silly, you idiot. You had me worried, you fool. Why? How dare you get crushed to death, really? And basically, he repairs Toaster, bundles them all off in the car boot, which is open, so they could easily just drop out, and drives away to the sunset, having left all those evil 80s modern appliances behind, snubbing them because they're his mums or whatever. Yay. And that's kind of
evil.
That's kind of the conclusion.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Any closing remarks? Gentlemen?
Oh, I mean, you know, I still enjoyed it.
I'm just trying to think of a good scoring scheme.
Well, you think of that, I'll give my opinion. Yeah, I really like this film. I like it for the little moments of, everything, like sadness, like regret. Like, I like moments where, like, the master comes back, sees his air conditioner is broken, and then rebuilds it, and then there's, like that moment where the air conditioner is tearing up because, like, no, I'm wrong, my cynical nature is wrong.
He did love me after all.
Even, like, when, there's an evil lamp in, like, the old one, and they throw it out. And even he has, like, a twinge of regret for, like, throwing out the toaster and the lamp and the radio and all that. And just like little moments all the way throughout really make you think. All the characters, all the main characters are fun.
Yeah, they all are quite nicely rounded as well, because they develop throughout and they kind of, you know, they start off bickering and not getting on, but they kind of bond together and they all prove themselves except the bloody radio, the git. But they all do something to contribute and are developed as characters, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah, I just really like this film. Again, it's not the most... It's a little bit more challenging for kids because of, like, some of the emotions and some of, like, the peril and some of the quite horror imagery that they have in the film. And I think there's, like, a point at the end where, like, a car essentially commits suicide. And it's like...
Let himself die.
This is a bit weird. But, no, I really like this film.
Okay. I'm glad I saw this film. It's a very well-made film, but I don't think I'll watch it again.
But we have sequels for that.
I know, there's The Brave Little Toaster to the Rescue and the incredibly insane Brave Little Toaster Goes to Mars. And that's not... That title suggests... Oh, that's a bit crazy. It is so weird. It has Albert Einstein's hearing aid as a character. And all kinds of weird things. I won't spoil this podcast, but we'll happily spoil if we did end up doing The Little Toaster Goes to Mars.
But it's just too miserable for me.
It is very miserable.
I don't think that's why I
like it. I think as a kid, like, you're given these, like, happy fairy tale things where there's a little peril just before the end, just so you can enhance the happy ending. But this one's like, you know, it's something new for kids. It's something you haven't seen before. A new way to, like, engage with the characters.
Well, again, I'll just agree with Abigail and say that it's really good, actually. It's just, it's too miserable. And then for all the misery that you go through, I don't feel as if you get a happy enough time at the end to make up for it.
They just have Rob fix the toaster. Then he does his old trick of blowing a raspberry and it pops because the toaster is real. But he doesn't know. And that's kind of enough, is that he's going to do some vacuuming later in uni, because we all did that, didn't we? We all spent all our time cleaning and using our electric blankets or listening to the radio. Yeah, right. Out partying or doing work, depending on how you approach university.
Do you think of a scale?
What about product ratings? Unless you have
how would that work?
Just give you a product rating. Don't know. I liked it. Very functional. I did get a lot of use out of it, but I question if I would really need the movie. I don't know.
So was that a nose trimmer?
I don't know. Any
the
ideas?
The nose trimmer of the film world.
I'm coming up blank, to be honest.
I'm going to call it a steering lock.
What?
Because a steering lock is... It's very useful, and for people who...
Live in a terrible area.
No, and for people who want that function from something, it's excellent at what it does. But I don't have a car, would therefore be useless to me.
Yeah, right.
So if it's the kind of thing that you want and need, it's very good at it.
You don't object to it, but it's not really for you.
Yeah.
Right. I guess if it's a product for me, then it is a combination of it's a toaster, come printer, come clock radio, awesome gadget that you got to have and you wish there were more of, because that would be awesome. I'd love a toaster, clock, radio, printer thing, because it would fill all my basic needs and more. So it's an awesome combination gadget that keeps giving. And it's horrible to get spare parts for.
The Swiss pen army knife of the
world. Gentlemen?
Is that what you're going for?
No, that was his.
Is that
I'm trying to think of something to do with potty training for kids, but...
Pot?
Okay. It makes sense in my mind, but it's not quite getting there. Oh, I know. It's like, you know, you give kids the potty and then you give them the special seat to get on the toilet. I'm going somewhere with this.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like, you know, you make it as easy for them as possible. But then there's that one moment where the kid, like, kind of steps out and has to do things on their own and it's a bit different. I can't quite think of what that would be.
I get you.
It's some kind of gadget to help children learn how to use the potty.
On their own, but not necessarily to make it easier.
Something to give you independence.
Yes.
Without...
It sounds like you're talking about the whole process of potty training instead
Maybe.
Of the product.
Maybe. Do you know what? I'm going to give up on this one.
It's a good film.
It's a very incoherent way we review things. Who wants to give 9 out of 10? That's boring.
I'm going
to
say a washing machine. It does a useful thing. But you don't want to be in the same room as it's training on and on.
Okay. Well, me and Anthony will take our potty training toaster combo thing, Swiss Army knife thing, and we'll have fun. And you guys can put it in the other room, just working and not really caring about it. I don't understand. We probably should just do like 4 out of 5 star type reviews, but that'll be boring,
We can give some star equivalents.
I don't like stars. I prefer numbers, because numbers are more, I don't know, quantifiable. A star, what's 4 stars? I mean, everything and nothing.
I'm going to give it 68 out of 100.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 80 out of 100 purely because it's really good. It's just not my style. Yeah.
10. Perfect movie.
Out of 100?
10 out of 100? No. Oh, let's give it a nice 90 then.
It's okay. It'll all be edited after I've said washing machine. Let me finish.
That's true.
And I'd give it an 8. It's not, obviously, it's not perfect. The tone gets a bit weird sometimes. Songs aren't all brilliant. But
if you want to grow up like me and Anthony, you've got to watch this as a child.
Yes.
And then it'll form your opinions on later movies.
Anywho,
that's the end of spoiler-filled film conversation.
Hooray!
No, hooray that it's finished.
That's just the title, but also hooray that it's finished.
Oh.
Okay, let's continue. Let's talk about The Brave Little Toaster Rescues People from a Pet Thing.
Goodbye.
Whatever it's called. No, I have more Brave Little Toaster movies.
No,
I'll put them on.
No, gag him.
VHS
quickly, do it now. Gag him. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
No.
Bye.